Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the fabulously Fukushima irradiated, fluoridated, fascinatingly fracked up country of New Zealand in the sunny slave South Pacific, where the hole in the ozone layer makes everybody get a part-time job as an incandescent light bulb. And my very special guest is the man with the answers. It's Anseri, Alex Anseri, that is. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Vinny. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, I'm glad you're here too. Are you like in a parking lot at McDonald's or something like that, broadcasting emergency style?
We'll talk a little bit about my last year's adventure shortly, but no, it's better than that, Vinny. I'm actually staying at a friend's house. I'm looking forward to, for the first time in a long time, doing my show Outside the Box this Saturday again on American Freedom Radio, at least for a few weeks. So for the moment, things are a lot better than they were.
Yeah, you've been kind of like a bouncing around, sort of like a hacky sack on the American back trail there.
It's true, and I've been trying to stay somewhat regular with my YouTube channel, but just to give a brief overview for listeners that are new to my work and what I've been doing lately. I did Access Television for about 6 to 7 years in Portland, Oregon, where I was doing a lot of what you're doing, but not on a daily basis, a weekly basis. And I was honored at that time to be able to introduce ideas about the New World Order and this freedom movement to people that had never heard of such a thing outside of the media promoting the left-right paradigm. And, Vinny, I chose to free myself from myself beginning several years ago. This constant fear of living without money, it haunted me, like it haunts a lot of us that are trying to do good work, but we don't want to live inside the system. So I decided that I would move to Texas, and I was there for about a year trying to help a company launch an alternative media network. And when that failed to move into fruition, I then went off grid completely and went in the middle of the desert in South Colorado. And I'm still in rural Colorado, and I've been trying to see what the rest of America lives like outside of what I read on, blacklistednews.com or things I hear about on AmericanFreedomRadio.com's podcasts and shows. I set out with very little money and followed the synchronistic clues, as Freeman talks quite often about, in this journey to find out what it's really like to try to do it, not just talk about it. And that's still something that I'm trying to figure out how to do, how to be free, literally, not just talk about being free.
Have you noticed that whenever you desperately need something, it just kind of turns up precisely when you need it, not before and not after?
Exactly. And I found specifically that I will receive what I need, not what I want. And I'll sit there and try to argue, and apply the law of attraction and say, no, I want internet now. I want truth or friends and allies now. I don't want things to be this hard. And then I go through that hardship, whether I like it or not, and find myself a different person, a stronger person, having survived what some people thought was going to break me. So there's been many times where my car's broken down. I've had very little money or funds, sometimes no spare tire. And many times out in the middle of the desert, there has been someone that has come by to help me. So these are things that you learn along the way.
Yeah, it's kind of like having faith in a way.
Having faith in Alcoholics Anonymous, Narcotics Anonymous. These groups are well known for having this idea of a higher power and it not being a religious one. But we can apply that type of thinking that alcoholics and drug addicts use to conspiracy research. And we too can come up with an understanding of a power greater than ourselves or our own ego, that this source, this oneness that we're all connected to. I feel we have responsibility to do that and do it outside of a religious box. And that's pretty
some
much
might
why
argue,
I made my show outside some the might box argue, a long time ago.
Some might argue, Alex, that there's not a whole lot of difference between a conspiracy theorist and a drug addict or an alcoholic.
Well, I'll tell you what, it is very easy to become addicted to certain information. And I think that there is a very fine line between being spiritually fit and being mentally ill. And as you talked about in detail on your show, Counseling for Truthers, which I've shared with a lot of my friends because it's funny and it's very real. Unless one makes an honest attempt to be spiritually fit, to live a moral life, this information that we deal with every day can F you up to a point to where your mother won't even recognize you, or you won't even recognize your mother. This stuff has the power, if you're not spiritually fit, to take you away from the faith, to take you away from seeing where there are forces of good working through us and around us.
Yeah, I do believe that that's an absolute case. And it's like, once you stop thinking to yourself, you know what, I need this and I need that and I need the other, once you realize, hey, hold on a second, is it me deciding that I wanted those things, or is it somebody else decided that I wanted those things? Am I actually happier and a better man now that I have this new flashy fandangled cell phone, or this this car that I don't actually own and the bank really owns? Am I happier now that I'm in massive amounts of debt? Am I happier now that I'm paying kind of like almost more than I can afford for my rent at the moment? Yeah, I'm kind of not.
Yeah, and that all deals with self-honesty, and that's responsibility, self-responsibility. And in some way, shape, or form, we have to work to continue to be self-honest with ourselves, in the same way that someone that is working to become a better meditator, to become more aware, for those that have done Vipassana meditation and other forms of Buddhist meditations. The goal is to become very aware and very equanimous to what you're feeling and not overreact, to keep that reactive mind under control and in check. Well, there's a Buddhist saying that is to see things as they are. And we also, you know, from those that have read Krishna's information, you know, to see reality as it is, not as we want to see it. Well, the same thing goes for keeping ourselves in check and taking a look at our own spiritual hygiene. And there are things that I don't like to look about in terms of myself and the world at times, because it's upsetting. But that's also another reason why I went out into the desert, into the silence, because in the silence, and you're not, you know, if you're not on Facebook every day seeing everybody else's reality, then there's no one for you to blame for anything. You're just there in your own mental space. And I don't think it's healthy to just go out in the desert and stay there. But hell, I think everyone that truly seeks freedom should try a few months in the middle of nowhere and just be in your own thoughts and be in a space where you can't blame anyone for absolutely everything, anything whatsoever. Mm. And yeah.
And it helps to take along a horse with no name.
That's right. That's definitely true. And yeah, it's there's something about I think I've identified it as becoming more allergic to the city, you know, in my travels from the last few years. I feel more allergic to these archonic dense population centers. And Dallas was the last straw for me. Living in Dallas, Texas, this is like, for anyone that's seen the movie They Live, if you want to think of a city other than New York and Los Angeles as a great city for that movie to be set, Dallas, Texas is it.
Could you elaborate? Because I've never been to Dallas.
Well, so I'm coming out of a situation where I leave my 6 to 7 years of doing a show on the same channel at the same time. They moved me around once, and that screwed things up for me. But the point is family. I developed a sense of family there in my hometown. And things were very tough for me economically. I couldn't afford to live anywhere. It seemed that there was no space for someone like me to get shelter at for more than a few days. And that hurt a lot. So I'm like, okay, wait a minute. Maybe I need to start thinking more globally about my message and about my audience. And by the way, when donations have come in, when I've needed it, most of the time, they've been from someone that's seen my YouTube channel or listened to my show on American Freedom Radio or someone that knows me off of Facebook. I started to see more help coming from places outside of my own hometown. And I had to really grow spiritually to take that jump and go somewhere that was not a very spiritual place or a place where I felt at home, a place like Dallas, Texas. I'll talk about why I went there in a minute. But in Buddhism, there's and I'm not a Buddhist, but you know, I'm using some of these ideas as memes for things I've been experiencing as I've been looking for towards greater self-awareness and growth. The practice of the Buddhist mandala of creating a work of art with sand, creating something so magnificent and then blowing it away and starting again. That is how I would describe my leaving Portland at the age of 31, basically starting over and having such faith in myself that I'll create again and my ego doesn't have to be attached to what I already created. I'll just do it again somewhere else. So someone invited me to Dallas and they paid me every week. It was actually the best paying job I've ever had to help this person create their own alternative media network. However, I was not the manager, nor was I the shot caller. And so for reasons beyond my control, the funding after a year was no longer there to launch this network. And I was very much in disagreement with the CEO of this would-be alternative media network as to the cost. I wanted something that was free or, you know, within $5 per month for people to have access to a network that would run alternative media content 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Essentially, not only was I set up to do a daily half-hour show, but I was program director and I was picking out some of your best shows and some of the best shows of Freeman and others for this real network that people could access on Roku. So to make a long story short, I went there on a leap of faith. And that faith was that I was moving in a more positive direction because I was letting go of my own ego, letting go of stability, of speaking, preaching, at times crying, literally, for people to wake up in my hometown because I wanted to keep it local, Vincent. I'm like, okay, you can't fix the whole world. You can't be Alex Jones. You certainly can't be Superman. So you got to make it local. And I thought that was the lesson for me in, you know, 2006, 7, 8, 9 as I was coming up. And then I had a shift of awareness again, right as Occupy was kicking off. And since then, I'm thinking more about the global audience and everyone everywhere, and not just small geographic areas. But in a nutshell, that's what led to me leaving Portland and what I built up and why I went to Dallas. And ultimately, I feel like it was all meant to happen for a reason, because for years on my show, I started to have more people on that were talking about living off the grid. People like Matthew Stein, When Disaster Strikes, rather, When Technology Fails, and other related books. Some dealing with primitive wilderness survival. Some just dealing with food storage and underground shelters and actually helping open a survival store called the Portland Preparedness Center before I left Portland, Oregon. So again, I wanted to live something more genuine and actually not be in a situation where I was asking for financial help from the audience. And I didn't really want to be in Portland anymore. I wanted to see the world. So all these steps and the intention that I put out there to live an off-the-grid lifestyle, it all led to me eventually being here, getting to where I am now.
Have you traveled overseas yet, gone to different countries?
I'm not, but my experience as a truther has been unique because as far as I can tell, I'm the only person whose father is from Afghanistan that's in the truth movement. I keep looking for other people. And I'm very baffled that in a world of how many people are on the planet now, Vincent? Seven billion? Are we almost to 8 billion? I'm trying to figure out what the powers that be, the divine ones, have for me and why I am the only one that feels called to present an assortment of truth about not only spiritual awareness, who we really are, but the new world order. I'm trying to understand what my true mission is, and I don't think I've done 10% of what I need to do in this lifetime.
Well,
but
you
I'm
were saying
constantly
earlier,
asking myself, where are the other Afghanis or Iraqis? Why have I been disowned by both sides of my family, the white side and the Afghani side, because of the content on my YouTube channel and my show on American Freedom Radio? So it's a mystery I'm constantly asking.
I think now I understand a lot why you like that Counseling for Truthers video, because I speak extensively about relationships with your family in there and how coming out for the truth actually puts a lot of pressure on. Now, you talked earlier about how you wanted to focus local and then you decided to go global. I started off doing the same thing. Like, I started off kind of listening to all the international talk radio show hosts and having the news and New World Order, the documentaries and so on and so forth. And then I noticed that there was nobody doing anything comparable in New Zealand. So I started going off and doing it in New Zealand. And then after I started interviewing activists and people in this country, what I noticed is they're parroting almost the exact same thing that I saw was going on overseas. And it's like, whoa, hold on a second. There's not a whole lot of difference between local and global anymore because we live in a globalist society.
That's very true. And you are 1 in 5 million. And why you're the only one in New Zealand that's talking about some of these things is also very interesting. You know, a friend of mine asked me about an hour ago, who hasn't listened to your stuff yet. She's now checking it out. she says, "Oh, what's New Zealand like? Are they really awake over there?" And I'm like, "You need to listen to the Vinnie Eastwood show. It's like he's going through the same thing over there, but 1 in 5 million actually sounds worse, Vinnie, than what I was doing in Portland, because Portland's only in the city of the metro area is about 1 million, 1.5 million. And there is a guy on the air who used to be a friend of mine. His name is Clyde Lewis of Ground Zero Radio. I don't know if you've heard of him. He's out there on some issues, but he's a great mind. Mm. He's talking to nearly the whole city on one of the biggest talk stations in the whole metro area. The tide has shifted and people are asking questions in the city that I'm from more than they seem to have asked when I was there. So, you know, even though it seems like we're in a zombie apocalypse, I'm constantly shocked at just how aware the world seems to be becoming.
Well, apocalypse means the revealing of great truth, ironically enough. We'll be right back after the break with Alex Ansari, Outside the Box, ladies and gentlemen.
Answer Vinnie Eastwood is going to be resetting his computer, and I'm going to continue talking a little bit about a few things, a little bit about my early years, and some of the things that I've experienced early on. But, you know, I was discussing my early years early on, and I know there's different people that are coming into what we call the truth movement. I cannot place enough emphasis on the value of basically the medium that I got started on, which was community access television. And even though it seems like we're facing greater and greater threats to free speech, it seems that every year we read about another threat to the internet. It seems that things at times almost get worse on our local community radio stations anytime they have partnerships with NPR. And other federally supported and directed news media organizations. It's difficult in this day and age, but you know, there are certain mediums, access television, if you have a medium like that. That's what I use from the year 2004 to the year 2011 to reach people that normally don't look for information in shows like this. They just find it accidentally. And so the power of synchronicity can literally, if you will, take over. And you might be talking about a certain issue or showing a documentary, turning in a documentary, downloading a video from YouTube. Go to keepvid.com, download that MP3 in full quality, and take that information. It may be about chemtrails. It may be about Agenda 21. It may be about fluoride in your local water supply. Maybe you found someone on YouTube from your community that is your own community's Mr. News. Do those people a favor. take that information that relates to local information in your local community and share that on Access Television or send it to the news stations. But I cannot place enough emphasis on the medium that I got started sharing my perspectives. Now, I've never thought about myself as a big shot or someone that's better than other people, and I've never taken voice lessons for anything. In fact, I make plenty of mistakes, and I'm not a perfect person. But I've been asked quite often, where did I get my education? What school did I go to learn how to do this? And the truth is, if you have a passion for something, if you have a willingness to do the work that it takes to get a message out, to plant the seeds. Because once you plant a seed, once someone's heard something, they cannot unhear something. Whatever it is, if you have the drive, if you have the passion, if you have the motivation, you know, there's a lot of things you can do even as a listener. And that's what I am. I'm someone that at one point was just a listener, someone that used to go down to Clyde Lewis's get-togethers. He would have these talks. We would talk about UFOs, conspiracies, you know, and different topics at a bar in Portland, Oregon. And I remember the year was 2002, 2003. And that was my family. That was my community. And then once I realized, wait a minute, if there's a local community TV station that's going to let a man under the guise of free speech run around naked. His name was Jim Spagg. For anyone into Portland Access, Portland Cable Access history, he pushed the envelope of free speech. I was thinking to myself, you know, there's definitely questions that need to be raised about 9/11 and many, many other things. The surveillance society. I still remember what it was like for people to get surprised when I would say that, you know, we are moving into some sort of a 1984 Orwellian surveillance society. And people would say that that was bullcrap at that time. And there was denial. You know, at one point I want to make a whole film about surveillance, and I'm glad the ones that have been made because I no longer want to make a film about surveillance. Now I want to make a film about China and how they're closely linked to the U.S., which I'll talk about later with Vinny. But Vinny, are you there? And it looks like Vincent is still not with us, but I believe that I'm still. Looks like we must have been talking about some heavy content.
No, well, see, that's one of the things that really bugs me about being a truther is that everybody assumes that just because you're doing a radio show or whatever, that all the technical issues are the result of the New World Order as opposed to your own incompetence.
I know, and I really said that sarcastically. I get tired of hearing those things, but well, yeah, we definitely need to start. And you said the other day, I believe that you lost some of your contacts on Facebook. Is that true, Vincent?
I lost everything on Facebook, basically all my groups, all the things that I was admin of. You can turn your webcam on now, by the way. I think we've got it all fixed.
Well, I'm sorry for that, but it's just all the more reason why we've got to start keeping backups of our contacts.
Yeah.
You know, same thing goes for those that have developed close relationships with people on Facebook. You know, I guess it's been a long time, Vincent, since we've mailed each other anything, since we've written emails. I don't get that many emails anymore. Everything is on Facebook, and I've conformed.
Yeah.
I'm okay with it, but I'm going to be vocal and say we've conformed to it. Let's not kid ourselves and be pissed off if someone's account just disappears overnight.
Yeah,
it's not our website. The free speech argument doesn't apply to Facebook.
That's true. It's a kind of domineering factor, and a lot of the social networking and hits to people's websites and so on and so forth are now through Facebook. So to have that kind of a platform is a lot of power, a lot of control. And it's come out recently that the NSA is doing Facebook data mining. So, you know, I say let them watch, though. You know, I mean, if they're going to watch me on Facebook, I'm just going to show them something freaky, you know, like me getting thousands of likes on whatever.
Absolutely. And I believe the founder of Facebook, he recently had his account hacked. And CNN did a story on this. The guy that did it is in Gaza. So someone in Gaza with a limited access to technology figured out a code or something, and he became a local celebrity out of it. Hopefully he'll get a job. He was hoping Facebook would give him a job, but they're like, no, we're not interested in having. So then a bunch of hackers have been contacting him. But I bring that up to say, if that can happen to him, and if he said years ago, Facebook users are effing morons for just posting voluntarily information. Take that to heart. What he said about people that will post it voluntarily and what happened to him. Now he's mad, along with the founder of Yahoo. And they did some sort of a conference relating to the NSA this week, where they are now saying they're very upset with all of this. I'm wondering, where were they a few years ago? Why are they just now saying that they're upset with the NSA?
Mm.
We've been told all this time Facebook's been working with the CIA. It seems like Zuckerberg forgot CIA.
Well, it was DARPA, wasn't it? The Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency. And they're responsible for a lot of very, very creepy, draconian kind of programs on the net, censored technology, and so on and so forth. And there's a video that you can watch on YouTube called What is Facebook? That outlines its connections to a lot of these very scary, draconian agencies.
Right. Well, what we're reading about now is not just globalization of the economy and of so many other things. What we're seeing now is China, Russia, and the United States working together when it comes to sharing technology about the people in their country. And a lot of this was going on before 9/11. We can get more into geopolitics, if you like, in the second hour or in this hour. But one of the things that I've been discussing on my show, especially since 2007, is that, you know, this surveillance network that we talk about is not just something based in Western Europe or the United States, or something that's being hatched at the Bilderberg Group. I perceive a larger network that involves all these guys, and that there is a larger network that we identify to be the New World Order that exists far outside of Bilderberg. So I think that there's more information documentation coming to back up these claims. We can read now about Russian special forces being invited to Colorado as recently as last year to take part in a drill. And there was another headline a few months ago about certain aspects of the Russian military or peacekeeping forces or whatnot, something along those lines, working with FEMA and disaster response organizations. Very creepy stuff. And here's something else for any of your Texas listeners. There is a company called Huawei. They make cell phones. They're like Verizon. They're like the Verizon of China. This company has already been highlighted by the Pentagon as being one of the top suspects in cyber attacks against the United States. We do know that the CIA manufactures some of these threats, but we do know some of them are actually real and that some of us have been attacked. You have Jack Blood on quite a bit. He's been attacked by China when he was talking with Tex Mars. They tried to send him child pornography. What did Luke Kradowski say someone tried to send him? What did Stuart Rhodes say 2 months ago someone tried to send him an email? There's multiple reports of people getting hit with so-called attempts to send them child pornography and cyber attacks. And in some cases are originating from overseas. Jack Blood traced the IP to Halliburton in Texas as well as somewhere in China. All very interesting. So let me get back to Dallas. This Huawei company, this cell phone company that's been highlighted as a suspect company. There's a ribbon-cutting ceremony where Rick Perry, the governor of Texas, is inviting them to Plano, which is like the Beverly Hills of Dallas, to set up their U.S. headquarters for this cell phone company that's involved in espionage and spying.
I freaking hate Rick Perry.
Yeah, he's a real scumbag. I was just thinking, a real scumbag and someone that at the time that he was running for the presidency, I don't think that he was really running or trying. You remember some of those videos where he was behaving like he was on pills or he was drunk? I think all that was intentional.
No, I didn't see that.
You didn't see that? But yeah, it was. I was watching that, and what I saw was another reenactment of what we saw with George W. Bush.
Yeah.
Where people act like they're retarded. They act like they don't know what they're doing, and they have no self-control or they have no etiquette. Then in reality, they're deliberately supposed to act that way. It's just something to speculate about.
You ever think about the possibility that they're just not acting?
That is very possible, and the powers that be are deliberately picking people like this for definitely specific purposes. But in the end, Vincent, it seems like we've lost so much faith in our leaders over this decade, not just in the post-9/11 world and this new world order, but old new world order stuff with Clinton and Bush Senior and Dan Quayle not knowing how to spell potato on CNN in the year 1990. It's a very famous CNN clip. You know, the vice president can't spell potato. And I'm just like, this stuff's got to be deliberate for us to reach such an apathetic state of mind to where we're like, you know what, we want no part of any of this process.
I don't know. I mean, think about what George Carlin said. He said, "This everybody talks about politicians. Look, it's garbage in, garbage out. This is the best that America can produce now."
Right. Yeah, I love George Carlin. It's funny when you go into YouTube and type in New World Order comedy, which I do every now and then to get a laugh when I need it in relation to all this craziness going on. He pops up right away. And I hope in our generation, Vincent, that we see more Bill Hicks come to the surface, and also more radio hosts like yourself that have a natural sense of humor, not an artificial sense of humor. And that's what we need to see, because Bill Hicks and what he's done, it still lives on, even though he is no longer with us. His spirit still lives on. So I hope to see more.
He was one of my chief inspirations, actually. A friend of mine introduced me to him when I was at university, and I think that was back in 2003. I think that was like nearly 10 years after his death. I found out about him for the first time, kind of thing, and that inspiration kind of still lives on in me. Now, isn't that great? I mean, and this is why I like the modern technology that we got now with the recording devices and so on and so forth. Because I've had so many amazing conversations with people over the years. Had those not been recorded, they would have just disappeared into half-winced memories and so on and so forth, and other people wouldn't have been able to share in those conversations. Other people wouldn't have been able to hear or see or feel the comedy of Bill Hicks, kind of thing. And you know, as much as technology can enslave us, it can also really, really free us and inspire us.
Yes, because what I think we're ultimately doing, Vincent, is healing. We're not just speaking. We're not just educating. And this is not anything to do with ego. I see in others. I see it in myself. And sometimes we can become out of balance if we're compulsive healers and we're running around trying to fix everything and, quote, save the world. No, first we start with ourselves. We get ourselves clear. And we put out an intent to become what we're actually able to become, what our potential, our true human potential is, which I think is one of the meanings of life. Is to realize our human potential. But part of that is to help heal people with our words. So when we hear these podcasts from the past, from the grave, if you will,
we're coming to
like
break.
Something's released.
Yeah, exactly. We don't have faith in our leaders. We should have had faith in ourselves all along. We'll be right back.
The world we knew is gone. The conditions which framed and taught us our standards have gone.
Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with the man with the answers. It's Ann Seri. Answer me, Ann Seri. We were talking over the break about Afghanistan and Rambo 3, and I really liked Rambo 3. In fact, I recorded a number of quotes from it because it was like, you know what? It's very interesting. You saw these Russians torturing this American soldier that they caught, and the American soldiers telling them, "You have any idea how many people have tried to conquer this country? You know, you have any idea? These people have suffered through it all. You can't defeat a people like that." And then later on, the Americans invade, and they still can't beat them.
It's totally insane, because you have this popular. Okay, Rambo 3 did very well at the box office. For people that want to look up the Wikipedia page, it may be seen as a flop now, but when that movie came out, because what was taking place at that time, the Mujahideen, they were in the news on a regular basis. They were being supported by this government, and it wasn't the worst thing for this government to support that group, because in truth, they were being invaded by this other country, the Russians. Of course, they already infiltrated the Afghan government before that. Familiar theme, anyone? They already established communism in Afghanistan, in the capital of Kabul, where my father was born and raised, where my grandfather was born and raised, where my parents come, where my father comes from, in that city, they established communism. As soon as the rest of the country found out, they're like, "No, I don't think so. We're not just going to become slaves of the Russians. We're going to have a war now." And, you know, there was constant pressures between the reformists and the conservatives, those that had more of a Pakistani, let's call it that, understanding of Islam. Because this Taliban group that's been the excuse for the U.S. to be there all this time, they have been getting their money from Pakistan, the ISI, which we know has ties to the CIA. That's why it's been heartbreaking for people to not look into that. that mainstream Afghanistan does not support the Taliban, nor never did. You're dealing with a weak group of people that have been, for the most part, weakened through starvation, through war, through things people should already know about in the history books. All the Taliban were like the Golden Dawn of today's Greece, you know, the fascists that came in and said, "We understand your suffering. We understand there's been a lot of rape here. There's been a lot of women dishonored. A lot of your men are beaten up and they're dead. We got an idea. We'll take you back to the good old days. We'll have a republic. Everything will be cool. And you'll be safe. But we got to tell you, you know, we got a dotted line here. You got to sign. You can have an Islamic rule." And so some people signed on to that because the civil war ceased somewhat. The battles between like Northern Alliance and other groups. But Rambo 3 has an interesting scene where he's coming upon this village that's being attacked by the Russians, and he gets behind a machine gun, and he's basically taking out these helicopters. It's an awesome battle scene. It's one of the best scenes in World War, in Rambo 3, where you're rooting Stallone on, you're rooting Rambo on. He's defending the woman. He's defending the village from attack. He would be considered a terrorist today. He would be struck by a drone in seconds because he's basically helping the militants. And every day on NPR, they're telling people in rural white America about how horrifying things are in the Middle East, in Afghanistan, about, you know, drone strikes in Yemen, drone strikes in Libya, drone strikes in Afghanistan, all because of these militants that just happen to be driving down a Jeep in the middle of desert Tumbuk nowhere. Boom, drone strikes. We just get used to hearing that without ever questioning if that was a father.
Shoot that Jeep. He's got militanted windows.
So isn't it funny that when you look on YouTube at Rambo 3 clips that scene is not on YouTube, nor is the movie in full on YouTube? See, there's reasons why certain clips get taken down. They wouldn't want anyone to associate, you know, with a weak Afghani tribe or village that's just being bombed because they're born at the wrong time at the wrong place. Now, people have asked me, Vincent, if I would ever go to Afghanistan. And you're talking to someone that is of Afghani blood, ancestry, but I do not speak Farsi. Pushto, I'm not even sure what tribe I'm from. I have learned everything about Afghanistan through the internet and through my own research. I have been disowned by both sides of the family because I was never pure blood on either side. And I will give, you know, on my mother's side, they were better to me and they raised me to a certain degree. But ultimately, I raised myself. My parents did the best with what they had to work with. But ultimately, they came from two different cultures and their marriage failed the second I came out of the womb. So my dad was always the weekend dad. And what I see when I think back at my dad and our relationship before it collapsed, my dad became very Americanized. I never heard any anti-American type, you know, like Delta Force, the movies with typical terrorists before 9/11 happened. I never met anybody like that in my life that was Afghani, ever. All I heard was about the importance of Islam. And how there was a one true God, and there are satanic elements in the West. All they were doing was expressing with their language, and they understood New World Order. There's evil over there in the West. We want to protect that from our culture. That's all that I remember hearing. And I find it very sad that despite the fact that my family tried to elevate themselves to being above Americans, I have seen Afghanis turn their back on me and worship this system. Worship the Federal Reserve, worship all these things that they claimed when I was a child they were against. So they're concerned with the universities, with being somebody, Vincent, having a minivan and 2.5 kids and a picket fence, whether it be made of wood or made from plastic made in China. They don't give a rat's behind. They're just glad that they're not in Afghanistan anymore and they're not getting bombed. So it's in their interest to never talk to somebody like Alex Hansary. Heaven forbid they ever get pulled out of their house and one of their women ever gets dishonored, because that is the primitive terror that lives in the Arab Persian heart, to the point where they will divorce their own family members because they choose to believe what the government and the media is telling the American people. So my father has become a translator for multinational corporations. The year I became a 9/11 truther, he became a translator overseas for them. Now, that is the type of thing. People think they're in pain living in the New World Order. Try, and I'm not trying to play victim. I'm trying to just express what I've been through. Hold it together when you feel like you're a threat to your own family because of who you are, because of the modern things going on. People should go back and look at the film The Siege. Now, the only reason I keep doing what I'm doing, and as we'll get into in the second hour, I have a warning for this country because I believe their plan is to invade this country with Chinese and Russian troops in 10 to 15 years. All I'm trying to do is just stop the invasions and stop all this. I don't see color at all. I see this dark, archonic spirit of evil that has taken control of some aspect of this earth and its political process. And I see people ignorant of that, of how one group is used to control the other group, and there is this sea of invasions that follow it. Call it karma. Because every country that's tried to take down Afghanistan in some way, shape, or form has gone through some type of collapse. Russia's not done yet. They still need to have their full-on collapse. Those guys are dangerous. I can go on and on, but I'm very concerned about the direction this country is going in. I'm concerned about the safety that the people are going to be in the future, and New Zealand and Australia and all these Western countries that have gone in a dark direction. I'm concerned about its sons. I'm concerned about its daughters. Because when you let evil like this run rampant throughout the planet, there are consequences to it. And although people are getting scared right now, we don't want you to get scared. We want you to help reverse what you can reverse. Because it's only because I have a faith in something, whether you call it God or a creator, I can feel that force working in my life. And I was deeply addicted to heroin before 9/11 and during around 9/11. We never got into that. It was when I got on the path to looking at these things that all of a sudden I didn't want to kill myself anymore. I wasn't ashamed of where my father was from anymore when I figured out what 9/11 was about. And this righteous fire started burning in me. Now, Alex Jones and David Icke may have kickstarted that fire like yourself and so many others that have been inspired by others. Something changed in me around that time period where I started to believe in myself. And I started to walk on a different path. The second I did that, Vincent, my whole life changed. And everything that I needed was given to me, but oftentimes not what I wanted.
Yeah. I think Anthony Robbins said it best, as a motivational speaker guy, you know, the guy with the hands like a bunch of bananas and really big. He's even bigger than me. I'm six foot four and the man dwarfs me, you know. And he says that humanity is suffering from a crisis of faith, paraphrasing here, not in God, not in their leaders, but a crisis of faith in themselves. And he thinks that that's the real reason why people aren't fulfilling their potential is because they're afraid, all right? And I think that's actually the opposite of fear isn't courage, it isn't bravery, it's faith.
Well, you address on your show a lot of people just attack people blatantly. I made a video once on YouTube, people that attack other researchers just for sport, just for fun. And a lot of that comes from, you know, the reason that I have such an issue with what David Icke said 15 years ago about being Jesus, and they have such an issue about some of these people, they can't take the good stuff and leave the rest because they're looking for a leader. They may not have come to that self-honesty yet, but they're really looking for daddy. They're really looking for a male role model in their life to fill that void that they feel in their heart, even if they haven't come to admit that. But that's where that stems from. Once they're no longer looking for a leader and they find faith in themselves and they develop discernment, they take what they want and leave the rest. And this is fundamental to that which we call a spiritual experience.
Now, if we were in some way, shape, or form becoming who we really were meant to be, if we're becoming who we want to be, I was just thinking about this. I randomly yesterday, I was going down to have lunch at the little organic cafe that we've got, and they're run by really nice people, and every time I go down there, I wound up having a really good conversation with somebody there, just randomly. And this week, for some reason, they're closed. And so I was like, okay, well, there's nowhere else that's organic that I can eat there. So I go down to this nice little Indian shop, and I notice that there's an elderly woman there who I recognize from the organic shop. And I go up to him, excuse me, did you have the same idea that I did? Did you come here because the organic shop was closed? And you go, yes, I did. And so I was like, do you mind if I sit with you? And she's like, yes. And we sit down and we have lunch together and we have an amazing conversation. And we talk about how society's degraded to such a point since she was a little girl up until this point now. And we both agreed that the reason why everything's deteriorated, why culture has become so vapid and empty and vacuous, and why morality and culture itself has become so demonstrably scumbaggery-ish is because there's really no family unit anymore. There's no strong female male role models. We'll be right back.